This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a special Memorial Day edition of the program, remembering those who have paid the ultimate price for our freedom. In World War II, that number was more than 406,000. Maybe you have a connection to one of those represented by a wall of gold stars at the National World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. But how much do you really know about those young Americans whose lives were cut short? Would you like to know more? Well, time to meet a guy who might be able to help. Bill Beagle, World War II researcher and author, son of a Korean War veteran. His website is ww2research.com. And if you're on Twitter, follow his account. His posts put names and faces on those who have died while serving our country. Bill, thanks for meeting me here in the studios of Hometown Heroes affiliate KNZR in Bakersfield, California. How did it come about that you started researching for the families of those who died in World War II, the details and the circumstances of their passing?
Well, you know, you just mentioned my dad, and that's a perfect lead-in. My dad was growing up in Detroit, Michigan during the war. He was living with cousins. And they were struggling to find a place to live because of the war. So they moved in with some cousins, and my dad had a cousin that was 7 years older than him named Morris Myers. Morris went into the Air Corps, became a gunner on a B-17, 381st Bomb Group, and all that his family ever heard was that in July of 1943, he was missing in action over Germany. And so my dad grew up always wondering about Morris. It was kind of an older brother to him. So my dad came to me one day in the late 90s and said, "Hey, Bill, I know you're a World War II enthusiast. Can you find something about my cousin?" I said, "Sure." So that was kind of what started it off. And the Morris Myers story is a sad one because he was not missing in action over Germany. In fact, his B-17 disappeared with four other B-17s flying from Newfoundland to Scotland. They went down in a storm over the Atlantic Ocean, and no one ever knew. The family never really knew the story.
How much of it were you able to piece together?
Well, I was able to find a lot because on Morris Myers' crew was a guy whose dad, it was the co-pilot of the crew, his dad was an attorney who had some connections. And in the file, it shows the letters the father of the co-pilot wrote to the Air Force saying, "You know, my son is missing. What can you tell me?" And so he got back the usual non-information letters. But then what the guy did was he wrote a letter to the Newfoundland Province Department of Tourism. And he did it because he wanted to know what the weather would be like. So from there, this man found an officer that was up at the base up there. And the officer said that we had incredible pressure to get these B-17s over to combat. And so although we had a rule that said if the weather is so bad, you got to keep them on the ground, this one guy that was running the base said, "I don't care what the weather's like, we got to get these guys out of here." So the reason that these four planes went down, I think three of them made it, four didn't, was because of the pressure to get these guys into combat. So here you had 40 guys and four aircraft lost before they even got there.
Tragic.
Yeah.
And there are so many stories like that in World War II, but like your family, most of the families really have very few details. And I'm sure there are a lot of families listening right now. Maybe it's a son, a daughter, a grandson, a granddaughter who has heard this line, which I'm sure you've probably heard from a lot of the families you work with. "Sorry, all the records burned down in a fire."
Correct. So what happened was in 1973 at the National Personnel Records Center, a fire did occur. It destroyed 80 to 90% of World War II era records for the Army. And one of the things that's not spoken about so much is that Marine and Navy and Coast Guard records were not destroyed.
But even some of those records that burned in the fire and that people have been told you can't find anything else out, some of those you're able to piece together. There are microfilms that exist on some of them. And then there are other records, if you go to the after-action reports down at the unit level, that you can find. How much of that have you done?
I've done an incredible amount of that. Another thing that I do is that after World War II, most of the states, I think 36 of the 48 states, paid a bonus to World War II vets, and they kept those records. Now, what's good about that is when they made the law for these bonus payments, of course, they said you've got to be able to prove that you were a veteran, or if you were killed, your family has to prove it. So a lot of the state records have a lot of the burned records in them because the people were able to pull those records to say, "Hey, this is proof." So that's one of the ways I do a workaround.
And that's one of the reasons I was excited about having you on this show, because you've done so much of this. And there are so many people who maybe they try a little bit. Maybe they find a government website. They type in a name.
nothing comes back,
right.
or they hear it burned down in a fire, and they give up. But it's still, like it stuck in your father's mind for all that time, it still sits with you. You want to know. You want answers. And I'm hoping that by sharing your story and how you've helped others find their family stories, that some people listening today will take the opportunity, take the initiative to reach out and start that journey of discovering more information, because you never know what it's going to lead.
That's right.
And you've got some pretty good examples of some of the families that you've worked with. And I don't know how you choose if you've worked with, what, over 1,000 families?
Yeah, over 1,000 families.
Holy cow. And how long of a time?
Starting about 1998 or 99.
Just because you wanted to.
Just
because
I wanted to. Right. And, you know, I'm a professional, so I get compensated some, but it's not, you know, I'm not going to Millionaire Acres on this one. So
how long typically, and I don't want to, you know, scare anyone away or intimidate them. If someone says, okay, this is my dad, my grandpa, we don't know anything. On average, how long would it take you to complete that portfolio and that file of information?
If they are Navy or Marines or Coast Guard, I'll usually give somebody about a 6-month estimate. And that includes writing off the letters and doing all the bureaucratic stuff I have to do. I have other people, if they want to know about their father or someone that was shot down, I've got a huge database of missing air crew reports. And so often I can say, I can get this to you next week. Now, I do have other ones where when I'm working on those who are in the Army or Air Corps that died in the war, that search can take me 14 months, maybe. 13, 14, 15 months. And there's just no way around it. The Army is difficult to work with.
So it's not that it takes you all those hours to do it. You're constantly, you know, at any given time, you're working on a number of projects.
Right.
But just the time to go back and forth with the government and these documents, that's the hang up.
Right. And then a lot of times they either they'll come back and say that serial number is wrong, or they won't come back at all. And then I have to follow up and call them and that whole routine.
So you're constantly on your toes, but
all
I know it makes a big difference to the families. One of the things that you've done that I think is really neat, and maybe it's because I'm so involved in college sports and have announced so many college ball games, including quite a few at UCLA, you went through and you discovered every student, faculty member, anyone who had a connection to UCLA during World War II who died during the war. That's a big project.
Yeah.
And what is that number?
They gave me a list of about 125 names, and I found almost double that they didn't have on their list.
Wow.
And a number of them were athletes, and then a number of them were just regular students. Some of them were frat guys. You know, I found their photos there, and others of them were, you know, guys that were only there for a few months. There was one faculty member who was killed killed in a blimp crash off New Jersey.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I think for those of us who grew up after World War II, I think it's really hard for us to grasp how all-consuming this was. And every college campus around the country changed in an instant. The best athletes are going off to war. Some of the instructors, they're going off to war or doing something else war-related. And that certainly was the case at UCLA. And I know I've talked to some folks before, some of the greatest names in UCLA history. You think of John Wooden, was supposed to be on the USS Franklin, which was kamikaze.
Absolutely.
He could have been killed and never had a coaching career.
Right.
I'm sure you've heard Jackie Robinson's story about fight saving him from combat.
Absolutely true.
So that's just a couple Bruin legends. But here you are finding out the stories of those Bruins whose stories were never told, who might have been names like Wooden and Robinson and never had the chance.
Right. And also interesting because UCLA was a more integrated kind of school than many other schools were. So I believe there were 6 Japanese Americans from UCLA that died in the war. 1 Chinese American, Frances Wei, who was later a Medal of Honor winner. There were actually 5 women from UCLA. 4 of them were WASP flyers. And then the last was a Navy corpsman or a corps woman who died from dental surgery that went wrong.
Wow. As you're going through each one of those stories, is this just data? Is this just information? Or do you start to almost get a feel for who this person really was and even the personality and the interactions with others?
I dream about these guys sometimes. And they're very, very interesting, very realistic dreams. So they're not just pieces of information to me. They're very, very personal.
And when you think about it, when all this was going on, keeping records was so difficult. That's why the records in war are so hard sometimes to pin down. I mean, if someone dies, the records that he was going to hand in might not ever make it where they're going.
Right.
It's so murky, and we didn't have the computers we have now.
Right.
So it really is. You're almost like an explorer, aren't you? You're like
Absolutely.
A Columbus in World War II research.
you know, sometimes if I'll get a guy and we'll find that he died in a certain town, and then I'll find the after action report for his regiment, and it says they were in a hole, they were 20 miles away. So I'm trying to piece together, what was this guy doing, you know, on the other side of the river when his whole unit hadn't crossed yet? You know, all kinds of stuff like that.
Yeah, and there really is no end. And I think that's probably one of the things that keeps you going. You never know what incredible nugget you're going to discover next time.
I never do. And what I love is from time to time, I'll get a case where I can't find anything about these guys in advance. Flat out zero. And those are my favorite guys because it's a mystery. You don't know, was he in the Philippines? Was he in Germany? It's very, very satisfying.
And I guess more importantly, the family doesn't know.
No, the family doesn't know. Or I just did a flyer where the family said he was shot down over Australia. And I said, well, not a lot of guys were shot down over Australia, but it could have been a plane crash anyway. Turned out he was shot down over Germany.
Maybe someone was talking about Austria once upon a time and it
could
got
be.
Transposed.
Yeah, could be.
And that's, again, really why I wanted to have you on this show, to give hope to some of those families who do have unanswered
right.
questions, who would love to fill in the blanks. And why don't you give us an example? We talked about UCLA and
sure.
that great project there, and what a treasure for the Bruins. Every school in America should have that. Because
couldn't agree more.
The kids on campus today are the same age those guys were, right?
That's right.
You want to talk perspective and putting things in perspective.
Right.
But let's talk a little bit about some of the specifics of some of these families that you've talked to. Tell me about this P-51 pilot, First Lieutenant
sure.
Julio Nuno. Is that
it? That's right. I was contacted by his daughter in 2012. She never knew him. She had a photograph of him and her mother and her when she was about two, but she didn't remember him. And like so many other cases after the war, her mother remarried, and there just wasn't a lot to be said about her father. Her stepfather, I think, wasn't real interested in maybe a rival, let's say, from the past.
Sure.
So she knew nothing about him. So she went through all the steps. She wrote away for his records. They came back and said, burned in the fire, don't exist, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so I knew that because he was a flyer and because of a few other tricks of the trade, I knew that I would at least be able to find out about his last mission, which I did. He was a P-51 flyer, shot down over Germany, crashed in a meadow across a little stream from a town. And she didn't even know that. She just knew he'd been shot down. Anyway, we were able to find that when he was shot down, he was buried by the local German undertaker in this little town in a grave with five dead German soldiers. And so 3 years after the war, when the Americans went through looking for him, because they had records that said he went down somewhere around here, they found him with these deceased Germans in there. And they were able to exhume him. And then they wrote a letter to the mother, who was in the process of getting remarried at the time. And so there was this big bureaucratic headache over who's going to be in charge of the remains. Is it the widow? Is it the mother? And so all that was lost to my client. And so once I found the records and I sent them to her, she called me up and she was, you know, almost in tears because now her father is becoming this real person. And the records were able to say his physical characteristics. He was 5'8", 150 pounds, brown hair, brown eyes, 8.5 shoe size. And she didn't even know that. She just knew that some of his brothers said that this is what he looked like. But it was very exciting for her.
Oh, I can only imagine. And I know you even hit a few dead ends along the way. Even that last name, Nuno, spelled with an M instead of an N. But I know that family, like all the families you've helped, is eternally grateful. We're up against the end of our radio time this week, but I have more of my conversation with Bill Beagle on the podcast at hometownheroesradio.com. You'll also find there a link to his site, www.research.com. You never know what you're going to find until you take that first step in the journey of discovery. And we've heard some pretty compelling examples of that today. And we've been reminded that one way to honor those who died while serving our country is to learn more about who they were. Thanks for listening to Hometown Heroes. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping this Memorial Day and every day we'll all remember that our freedom is not free.